why as a church have we focused so much on people's heads? Why as a church have we said that, like, kind of unless you sort of believe this, whatever that means, whatever we mean by saying that somebody believes X or believes Y, then you can't really belong? And what happens if we start with a belonging? Hello and welcome to Restless Sanctuary from Sanctuary First. I'm James Cathcart and I'm joined by Albert Bogle.
Great to be with you, James, in this new podcast series. I'm really excited about it. I'm a bit restless about it.
You're feeling restless. Well, that's on theme, because this podcast is called Restless Sanctuary and we are a couple of restless souls, aren't we? We've got itchy
Absolutely.
Feet. We're excited. We want to know what's round the corner. And this is a podcast for restless souls, and we want to unpack faith, Bible, theology as we're living it today, Albert, as we're living it out, not just highfalutin ideas, but actually as we're living it, as we're feeling it. What does it mean to follow Jesus in the 21st century? Quite often it means feeling restless, doesn't it?
Do you know, there's something about all that, James. You know, when I studied theology with Dr. Sezulis, you know, Professor John Sezulis, one of the things he used to say to us, you know, was, if you, and with his Greek, amazing Greek accent, he would say things like, you know, if your doctrine has no practical implication for your everyday life, then what is the point of your doctrine?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and it's all about how we live. You know, the gospel is all about how we live. And understanding the Bible is so that we can live in a dynamic way, but in a just way, and seek to bring about justice in the world and have a balanced life.
Totally. And I think there's something really cool about this tension between restless sanctuary, because a sanctuary is a space where you find rest, you find shelter. But restlessness, that's the, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure, I don't know how I feel. And we often find at Sanctuary First that, like, what we're trying to do is offer something for folks who are restless and looking in at the sanctuary. People who are restless and thinking, is there more? Is there something more? But at the same time, be talking to folks like ourselves might be in the sanctuary and feeling restless, looking
also,
out, you know?
Because we've got to go out. I think that's the whole point of the restless sanctuary, is we're called to come in to go out.
Yeah, totally.
You know, it's not about hiding in one place and being and feeling safe. No, the gospel is... You know that song, I think, that we used to sing, I think Ian White wrote it, a ship that's in the harbour is still and safe from harm, but it wasn't built to be there. It was made for wind and storm, you know. So we're called to, yes, be in the sanctuary sometimes, but then to get out and go. And I think that's the restlessness that, you know, we need to go. And yet we want to stay sometimes. Should I go or should I stay?
I was wondering how long it would take you to get into a song, Albert, and that's, what, just 3 minutes, I think? But absolutely. And I think restlessness also kind of chimes with where we are in the world at the moment. You know, there is a lot of restlessness about established world orders, established ways that things go in geopolitics, in the economy, in technology. You know, when you think about all the disruptive technology that's going around, there's a lot of restlessness and unease. What do we do now? You know, when you think about the environment as well, and our planet being restless, you know, and thinking we're at a turning point. We're heading into new chapters here. And I think that restlessness is really across humanity.
Absolutely. And we're looking for a bridge over troubled water. That's what we're looking for, isn't it?
We really need a bingo sheet for people here.
But a bridge over troubled water, that sanctuary is to bring us to that place where we can be at peace.
Yeah.
And know that, yeah, we're going through a hard time, but we're going to get through this. We're going to get through this because there is a greater goal, there is a greater promise out there for us. And there's someone who holds all this within the context of his creation and what God has got for us. So it's and that all comes in our understanding of again our theology of the God we serve and the God we worship, the God who holds everything and has a purpose for all of our lives. in the midst of all the turmoil.
Absolutely. The early church, the early Christian movement, they were often referred to as the people of the way. And in Christianity, there is this sense that we're on the way somewhere. We've come from somewhere and we're going somewhere. And, the early church used the language of pilgrimage and the idea of being pilgrims, that we're all on the way somewhere. We're on the way following Christ. And one of the things, and we're going to be thinking a bit about this over the coming weeks as we get stuck into some parables, that's where we're going to be getting started, is how important hospitality is in the Bible. And one of the reasons that hospitality is so important is in, the ancient world, in the ancient Middle East, there was no Premier Inns, there was no Megabus. how you got around, how you stayed safe, how you formed a network, particularly as this, new community of Christians was knowing people, was welcoming people even that you didn't know, and finding hospitality, finding welcome, finding shelter. And in a sense, that was sanctuary. And so the early Christians were very mindful of the fact that, yes, we could find sanctuary on earth, but it was sometimes a temporary thing. It was sometimes a restless thing, a place where we found somewhere to be for now, but then Jesus would be calling us somewhere new.
Yeah, that's quite an interesting take on all of that. It's quite important to keep that in mind, that that's what sanctuary first is too, that we're a place where people can come, but it's maybe you're maybe passing through because you find a connection into our loving community that is not online, and you don't no longer want to be online, and that is absolutely fine. But it might be that you keep both things going and they have that duality. And we want to be that kind of community that's holding on to the things that are so precious, but holding lightly to things that are man-made ideas.
Totally. Totally. And one of the things about Sanctuary First, Albert, is we're not the way we are. We're not the shape we are because we love the internet. We're not the shape we are because we love technology. We're the shape we are because we love Jesus, and we're the shape we are because we love God. And so this is where we are. This is where people are. This is the world, the media world that we live in. And we think that there's opportunities to use the internet, to use podcasts, apps, that kind of thing, to be with people, to be that restless sanctuary that travels with you.
Absolutely.
And the internet's kind of beside the point. We're just here because that's where people are, in the same way that church buildings were shaped the way they were, because that's where people were and that's what people needed. And in some cases still need, absolutely. But we're not the internet place, really, are we?
I was saying to someone the other week there, and having a conversation with them, that when the first church, when Constantine, you might say, accepted the church, and the church almost started to become institutionalized, the church moved from being persecuted and underground to being, seen by everyone above board. And where did they go? They went to the basilicas.
Yeah.
What is a basilica? A basilica is not a church as such. Originally, a basilica was a big oblong building where the Roman community worked out its business. So there was the tax man there, there was legislators there, there was lawyers there, there was people selling goods, it was a place of commerce, and that's where the Christians then decided to meet.
Yeah, absolutely. Bona fide, literally using the Latin, that was good faith, where you could practice, where you could be out in public, and that changes the nature of the church, because, the church pre-building, meeting in people's homes and meeting perhaps sometimes in secret, or meeting in kind of low-key ways or in open air ways, was a community that was open. There were more women probably in leadership, there were more people from various different backgrounds intermingling. But as soon as the church becomes official, as soon as the church becomes public, then it starts as well taking on some of the shape of the world, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's interesting. So that is the church reaching out where people are. And I suppose that's what the internet is. It's like the equivalent of a basilica.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're here, but we got to be like, yeah, we just happen to be here. Really, we just happen to be here. But there's another, speaking of history and stuff, I thought I'd drop a little quote on us here, very short, from St. Augustine. So obviously one of the big figures in church history. Who wrote the Confessions and wrote a lot about wrestling with life and faith. And he said, as I think it's at the start of the Confessions, but he wrote that our hearts are restless until they find rest in God. And so in a sense, you know, in terms of our mission statement here as a podcast, as a, you know, Sanctuary First here, that's kind of what we're saying. Our hearts are restless, but they will find rest, and they do find rest in God. You know, we know that there's a yearning in our hearts for rest, and we know that that yearning can be met, but that there's restlessness along the way.
It was quite a restless character, was our St. Augustine before he before he found faith.
Absolutely.
And he was no saint. You know, it's a very interesting person to just reflect upon, and such a depth in what he actually ends up giving people in as a philosopher and thinker, but also as a theologian, but also a very intimate relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And that longing, I think that's what we're talking about, that restlessness, searching for there is more to this.
Yeah.
And I suppose that's what we're hoping for people looking in and being part of this podcast will start sharing some of their restlessness and maybe even asking questions. And we won't say we'll always be able to answer them, but maybe from time to time to get questions and to get comments that will allow us to take this podcast in a very positive direction for people.
Absolutely. And it's one of the ironies, isn't it, that, you know, if you're feeling alienated, if you're feeling like uncomfortable and you're not quite sure you fit or belong in different ways in your life, you are actually not alone. That is such a universal feeling. Isn't it funny how we're often united in our discomfort, our loneliness? And if we were just to realize that actually a lot of us feel this way. You know, I remember seeing there's a title of a book, which is something like I saw on the bookshelf once, which is like, is everyone hanging out without me? And I think that can be the feeling in our life, can't it? That somewhere other people are belonging and fitting, whereas actually that's just kind of a universal human condition. So where do we find belonging? Where do we find fulfillment? That's something that unfolds and realizes over time, because Jesus is with us for the long haul, Albert, isn't he?
Well, you know, absolutely. You know, you're just reminding me of a person, a lovely guy who used to come to the church when I was minister in St. Andrew's Bowness. And you know, he said to me, you know, Albert, I'm not really a believer. But he said, I like coming here because I feel accepted.
Aye.
And he said, there's something about this place that makes me feel I want to keep coming back. But I don't think I'm a believer, you know, but I'm looking for something more. But I don't know. I don't know I'm an atheist. I don't know I'm an agnostic. I'm just someone looking, and right. I feel comfortable here. And I think that's the start for some people.
Totally.
And maybe that's what you're looking in this Sanctuary First and this whole Sanctuary First website or our Sanctuary First community. You're looking in on it, and you're just not sure. And you haven't declared yourself. You've never ever put anything down in a yeah. comment or anything like that.
Yeah.
You're not going to do that. That is absolutely fine with us. Just hang in
totally.
With us
totally.
and see where it takes you.
That's it. And I think that's the tension, you know, with restless sanctuary. I think sometimes we feel that, like, I can't be in the sanctuary if my head's all over the place. You know, like, maybe there's something to God, maybe there's something to Christianity, but I just can't get my head around it. And I don't have this peace that other people seem to have. You know, I've talked to people in the past who are like, you know, if I mention my faith, and sometimes people have said, like, I wish I had that. I wish I had that. You know, and there's that longing, the sense that they don't, it doesn't click in their head. You know, they're not there conceptually, mentally, but they can see something in it. And they're like, oh, it's great that you have that. And I think, why as a church have we focused so much on people's heads? Why as a church have we said that, like, kind of unless you sort of believe this, whatever that means, whatever we mean by saying that somebody believes X or believes Y, then you can't really belong. And what happens if we start with a belonging? You know, like that guy that you mentioned, Albert, what if we just start with making people feel at home? Like, you can be here even if you've got no idea what's going on, because most of us in here don't have much of an idea of what's going on.
Yeah, and it's as you journey, come follow me. Come Amen. Follow me. And I will make you fishers of men. Come follow me and you will discover things about yourself. Come follow me. and we'll go somewhere.
Aye.
Come, follow me. And it's that following that we're asked to do, and that'll go on to come in the journey. Come in the journey. And you know, this is James, this is the 40th anniversary this year of the Vine Trust.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, the Vine Trust is an international relief agency that I, with some others, founded way back 40 years ago. And we have people, doctors and dentists and nurses and people from different different areas of life that come to work with us in Sanctuary First for short periods of time, sometimes for as little as 10 days. And sometimes people come in, they're not believers, they wouldn't just call themselves Christians, but they might be have another faith altogether. But they come with us because we want to change, to make a difference. We want to be transformative. We call ourselves the Vine Trust because Jesus said, I am the vine and you are the branches. But people can come and journey with us. And the strange thing is that we've discovered that when people come on that journey, it's during that journey they discover something that they'd lost, or something, they find something, and they begin to then explore a bit more about faith and what faith is. I'm not saying they all become card-carrying Christians, but a number of them have, mm-hmm. because it's been the journey that helped them meet divine Jesus and change their life and change other people's lives. So it's that journey, making space for people to feel welcome.
Absolutely. And kind of, I don't know, being okay with the restlessness, you know, being okay with the fact that this isn't some kind of path to enlightenment, you know, that suddenly we're going to, you know, you're going to get Christianity and you're going to be all calm mm-hmm. and zen and like in the zone and nothing's going to bother you. And you're, you know, when you think about the Gospels, and we're going to be looking soon at a part of the New Testament, and you think, who does Jesus hang out with? Who does Jesus spend time with? And all sorts of people from all sorts of walks of life. And the disciples, you know, the idea of the disciples of Jesus, thinking about that word discipleship. Well, the discipleship are a pretty motley crew. They're a pretty rough and ready group that get things wrong all the time. And they're in many ways not particularly great examples of, you know, upstanding yeah. people or whatever. They jump to the wrong conclusions. They get upset. They get petty. You know, but these are the people who Jesus spends time with. Jesus is here for all of us.
And that's just what the church is like.
Yeah.
And so if you can fend up with the church and you've opted out of the church, I understand that. But you know what? That's just life, you know. Yeah. And it doesn't matter what group of people you go among. There will be times when you just, you know. But the good thing is that within the local community, the local church that's meeting in person, there's a longing for that local place to become a colony of heaven.
Aye.
A place where life has been lived out, but where people can come, and that becomes almost like the sanctuary we're talking about, a colony of heaven, a place where you can feel loved. And I think it's important that sometimes when we worship regularly in a community, that we begin to see ourselves as a colony of heaven and begin to see the good and the love and the care and the kindness that's all around us, and thank God for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's more kind people in the local community, in the local Christian community, than there are people who are a pain in the neck.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know? And often they're the same people. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it, Albert?
That's right. Exactly. There's a kindness. We just need to maybe cut one another a wee bit more slack.
Well, that's it. That's it. And it's tapping into it. I think, you know, there are so many ways in our lives where you think, if you just give people a chance, you know, the outpouring of goodness and kindness that you see around you is incredible. And I think when we live lives that feel isolated, that feel atomized, you know, that we're in our little group and there's other little groups, life can feel scary, the world can feel scary. But it's funny that when catastrophe strikes, when life gets hard, life gets difficult, it's amazing how often people will come together, and people you hardly know come forward with just amazing uh-huh. generosity. So it's there under the surface, ready
See,
to
God,
be tapped.
God made us, here is a classic kind of a challenging idea, but God made us with original goodness as well as original sin.
Yeah.
Original
yeah.
goodness. Because when God created the world, what does he say? It says in the scriptures, and God saw that it was good.
It was good. It was good.
It's good. It's good.
It was good.
This is good.
It's good.
You know, and I think that's there is something there that we need to pull that goodness out of one another.
Absolutely.
And that's what the Holy Spirit does. That's mm-hmm. when we become in touch with the presence of the God and the Holy Spirit. He begins to bring out the goodness of God in our hearts and in our lives.
Amen. Amen. And so when we're at, you know, in this world, in this kind of inflection point of this restlessness, this unease, there's two paths ahead of us, isn't there? There's the path where we become more isolated from one another, more scared, more withdrawn. And then there's also the path that we tap into that original goodness. I love that original goodness that's in us. And we become more than the sum of our parts. And we, in our total humanity, reflect the image of God. But there are different ways to go about that. And so I think this is a great segue into our first kind of topic, if you like, our first sort of thing that we want to talk about, which is, of course, the parables that I mentioned earlier. And there's one particular parable, kind of the parable, that I thought we'd have a wee chat about in this first episode. And we're kind of in this space at Sanctuary First over the autumn. We're going to be looking at parables. And we thought that would be a great way, because in the parables, you see a lot of restless people. Often the stories that Jesus told were about people that were just kind of not quite satisfied. Something's wrong. They're looking for something. They've lost something. They're kind of uneasy. And he uses these parables both to comfort people and to challenge people. And this parable that we're going to look at, the parable of the prodigal son, is a kind of classic example of that, where it's a story that both brings comfort and reassurance, and also a real big challenge. And Jesus was doing both of these things through the one story.
Yeah, I can just ask you, if I can act as a daft lad at the moment, somebody's maybe listening in, they're saying, so what is a parable?
Totally.
And then somebody else is looking in, and they're listening in, and they're saying, and prodigal, what is a prodigal? So could you maybe open that up a wee bit for folks and just explain a wee bit about what is a parable?
Totally, totally. That's a great point. And also, because that phrase prodigal son is a bit of a misnomer, it's actually a bit of a misleading title. It's become what we call that story, but there's more going on there. So yes, parable. So parables are this word that's used for the stories that Jesus told in the New Testament. So these are stories within the Bible that are fictional. So Jesus is telling these wee stories about various different things. You might have heard about the mustard seed or the Good Samaritan there's tons, these little parables and stories. And Jesus told these stories, and they're often quite interesting, quite enigmatic. There's different levels going on, and there's bits where Jesus explains what's going on in the parables, and there's bits where he doesn't explain what's going on in the parables. Because they're interesting stories to kind of, it's often in the midst of Jesus talking to people and preaching in crowds and out in the open air, he's telling these stories. And sometimes people are left quite perplexed. So there's both the sense of parables as something that hook you in and as a bit of a slow burn as well. Anything else on parables, Albert?
So there's a wee bit about restless sanctuary in the middle of the parables.
I think so. You know, there's that phrase like, what is it? Comfort the disturbed and disturb the comfortable.
And then Jesus says things like, sometimes, he who has ears, let him hear, or he who has eyes, let him see. But for some people, they're not going to see it.
Totally.
And it's that kind of, challenging, these stories of Jesus. Listen, we all love stories, don't we? In fact, you know, stories are what engages us all the time.
Totally. I mean, we are the storytelling creature, aren't we? Like one of the things that sets us apart as humans is our ability to link different events together, different facts together, and make them into a story. You know, we don't just live constantly in this moment. We're able to think ahead. We're able to look back. We're able to imagine alternatives.
I mean, people go to, I mean, I know that you've been a comedy writer and sometimes involved in comedy and drama and all that stuff. But people go to these shows, to comedians, to hear stories. I mean, what made Billy Connolly such a famous comedian was his storytelling.
Oh, totally.
And as he told the story, he saw something funny in it. But sometimes, if you listen carefully too, there is always a wee profound bit in the joke.
Yeah,
you know, that underneath is something else again. And that storytelling is all around us as we listen to one another. And so Jesus' stories are powerful in this story that we're going to be looking at. Some people call it the loving father, and some people have seen it. I've heard it seen as the lost sons, not the lost son, but the lost sons. You know, it's interesting. The title helps you maybe begin to understand how you're going to interpret the story.
Absolutely. So this is the story of the prodigal son, as it's been referred to. And that word prodigal is like profligate. It's like just totally reckless, just burning through money, burning through resources, just totally bad, poor fiscal responsibility, as the politicians might say. Just completely all out there. And so in Timothy Keller's book, The Prodigal God, he sort of shifts that around and suggests that in terms of how we understand this parable, we should think about God and the father figure in the parable as the one who is reckless, who loves with abandon, who is reckless in his love and his generosity and his compassion. And so rather than looking at the character of the younger brother as the prodigal son, the son who's wasting the money and burning through the resources, as we'll get to, is to actually look at the generous love of the father, who loves despite the rejection, who loves despite the hurt and the pain, who just goes on loving us, and that's what is at the heart of this story. But of course, Jesus just simply says, there was a man who had two sons. And so in a sense, that's what the story is. It's the man who has two sons.
Yeah, you can see how people will listen to that. There was a man who had two sons. People are, right?
Okay. Yeah, okay.
I know a man. That could be me. That could be a man who's two sons. You know, that kind of, isn't it?
Yeah, and there's that, and it's because that's what we remember, isn't it? Stories are what
we
remember.
And immediately, you know something, James? Immediately it says, there was a man who had two sons. They think, I know what it's like to have two sons. Okay. I know what it's like. And Isaac's thinking to himself, Jacob and Esau. You know, the two sons.
Yeah.
The two sons. There's that. Just that tension often.
Yep, there's instantly a story, isn't there? Instantly something is going on. There's a man who had two sons. And so I think probably because this is such a fantastic parable, we might actually look at this over a couple of episodes, but we'll give you a wee bit now, and then we'll maybe come back to it in a future episode, next episode as well. But to give you the summary, you know, and it's in Luke 15, you'll find it in Luke 15. There's a man who has two sons, Albert, and the younger son says that he wants his inheritance right now. So he's absolutely shocking. This is an absolutely scandalous thing to do. He just says, give me it now. I want it now. I'm not going to wait till you pop your clogs, Dad. I want it right now. Give me what I'm owed, and I'm just going to go out now. And shockingly, the father says, okay, you can have it. So he sells up what he needs to do. He gets, you know, the collateral, gives the younger son the money, and the younger son goes out there and spends it on wild living, and he goes traveling, and we hear in the parable about the stuff he gets up to, and this is where the word prodigal comes from. He's totally reckless. He's got no thought for the future. He's not taking this money and using it to get himself a wee hoose somewhere. He's absolutely burning through the money, and he finds himself at his lowest ebb when he spent all the money, and he's in the pigsty. He's in the pigsty. So, Albert, your turn now to take over the storytelling reins. What happens to this, this son?
He's in the pigsty. And I'm just thinking to myself how true this story is for so many people. There's people out there saying, this is not a fictional story, James. This is my story.
Yeah. This has happened.
This has happened. My brother did that. He ran away with, you know. And so there he is. He's in the pigsty. He's the place where he shouldn't be, because as a good Jewish boy, he shouldn't really be even in touch with pigs, because there seem to be unclean animals and all that kind of stuff. But he's there in that situation, and he's just wallowing, and he's just got to just, and he's ashamed, he's broken, and he's sad. And then he thinks to himself, And you know, in the authorized version, it says, he says, I will arise. And he thinks it through. This is, he's not doing it yet. He's thinking it through in his head, right?
Practicing.
And he's saying, he's practicing it. He said, I will arise and I'll go to my father. And this is what I'll say to him. Father, I've messed up. I've sinned and I'm not worthy anymore to be even called your son. But could I get a job with you? Can I work as a hired hand?
That's it. He's not asking to go back to being the son.
He's not asking to go back, but there's a bit in him and he doesn't want to even say that. But there's a bit in him that he's saying, I know my dad will take me back.
Maybe if I do my time, if I do my bit, if I show I'm penitent, you know.
My dad will, I know my dad will take me back, I think. Because he knows his dad. That's the point. He knows his dad. And so he thinks about that and then he starts on the road home. And I think that's the hardest bit for him, to start on the road home, because he knows he's going to get it on the neck from his older brother. That's not going to be an easy gig to go into that house.
Oh no.
And to live with his older brother.
Oh no. Oh no. And so we pick up the story. He's walking along the road and it says, while he was still far off, while he was still far away, the father sees him. So the father's standing outside, clearly. He's standing outside and he sees this younger son coming up the road and he runs to meet him. The father runs, okay? And like people like Timothy Keller and other writers on, you know, this parable talk about like what a big deal this is. Because in the first century, like the patriarch of the family is not usually someone who's hiking up their robe and running down the road. Like this is a sign of like... He's like, he's acting like a wee boy, you know, he's just he's just running straight to welcome his son back because he's found his son, his lost son, who he loves so much. And he smothers him and he welcomes him back with open arms.
And of course, that's not the end of the story.
No.
Because of course, not only does he welcome with open arms, but he has a party and he gets the servants and everyone. And then the older brother has been out working all day. And he comes back and there's absolute merrymaking going on all around. And he's absolutely exhausted. He wants his dinner. He wants peace and quiet. And then all of a sudden, he hears. He's always hear from somebody else. You know, and somebody, a third party, says to him, that's your brother back.
Yeah, who's that guy? Mean? Who's that guy?
That's your brother back. You know, pain in the neck. You know, that wee brother that causes you all the hassle. Back in me's dad again. And he is absolutely, as they say in Scotland, he's beeling.
He is pure beeling.
Isn't he? He's had enough. And he just... See, my dad's just, he's going to tear a strip off his dad, isn't he? He's going to tell his dad what he really thinks he's been used.
Yep. And I'm just looking here, looking up the phrase, and it's like, look, all these years I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders, yet you never gave me even a young goat so I could celebrate with my friends. And this is in reference to the fattened calf. You know, this is the big deal, the feast that's been put on for this no good, useless disappointment of a brother who's just always let him down, never pulled his weight, and all this fuss is being made for him despite everything the older brother has done. And this is one of the things about storytelling and about the power of Jesus's story, because right at the top of the story, as we said, there was a man who had two sons. And then we spend a whole bunch of story only talking about one son. So that's quite a good sort of storytelling technique, is the intrigue is like, who's this other son? What's going to happen? What's that all about? And it's at the end here is the kicker, because the older brother will not go in. So the father's begging him, he's pleading with him. He says, come on, come on, your brother was lost and he's back. We're whole again. We're back together. Please just come in. And the story's left on that cliffhanger because we don't hear what happens. Will the older brother relent and go in? Or will he stay outside? Will he leave that wound open?
Here's a question. So maybe we could ask it that at some point further down the line, that question. What would be the scenario if he goes one way, or the scenario if he goes the other way?
Aye. Well, that's
because
it.
Because in actual fact, that is the story of many family situations in families. That there is a big division. And when the father dies, what's going to happen?
Absolutely. And it's easy for us, you know, just to romanticize something like this and see the younger brother as the underdog, you know, like, oh, do you know what I mean? He was wayward, but he's come back now. And isn't this a touching scene and reunion? But as well, spend some time there with the older brother and think how that must have felt. Because the pie, if you like, has been diminished. It's been cut down. So, you know, as the older brother in the society, he had the responsibility to look after the place, take on the estate. He was going to inherit this money, and the pie has got smaller. And he's thinking, what did I do wrong? Why has this terrible thing happened to me? Why do I just have to swallow it? Right? Why do I just have to take it? There's no, you know, there's not even like a, okay, the younger brother's come back. We're going to make him, you know, he's going to sleep in the barn for a bit and look after, you know, the sheep. We're not going to let him in yet. And I'm going to discuss it with your older brother and see if he's okay to let you back in. We'll do it on his terms. There's none of that. There's no fatted calf for him. Just has to swallow it. And so in this story, there's a real challenge. This isn't just a reassuring, cozy story. This is a sense of like, both of the brothers, you know, in terms of our podcast, Restless Sanctuary, both of our brothers have been restless. And there's so much resentment in the older brother. Why has he been so good? Why has he worked so hard? Because he's trying to earn it. He's trying to earn his father's love. He's trying to earn the respect. He's trying to earn his place, earn his inheritance. And it turns out that that's wrong. It turns out that that's wrong, that that is not something that he has to earn, that he has to earn that way. And that's
because
tough.
He doesn't realize, because the father says to him at the end, says, but I thought you knew all along that you were my son and I loved you.
And everything I have is yours.
All that I have is yours. All that I have is yours. Did you not know that? And if this son comes back and is welcomed, when I go, you'll be taking my place. And I want you to treat him the way that I've treated him.
Yeah.
Because all that I have is yours. Powerful stuff, isn't it?
It is. It is powerful stuff. And so, you know, and so to go back, so I said that you find this in Luke 15, right? But always, you know, context, you know, looking at the wider story. So, you know, if you were to look up this parable, you'd find it at verse 11 and it runs on till the end of the chapter. But if you go to the beginning of Luke 15, the scene is set and we've got the tax collectors and sinners who are gathering around to hear Jesus. This is a kind of catch-all phrase for the sort of the wrong type, the wrong people, the people on the fringes, the outsiders, you know, people hated. The tax collectors, the collaborators with the empire and with the Romans and all that, you know, these are bad people, you know, as regular people would think. They're of course not bad people. Jesus could see that they're not bad people, but there's this sense of them as being, you know, ne'er-do-wells, right? And then the other people who are gathered are the Pharisees and the teachers who are muttering, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. And so this is the two groups of people who are listening to this parable. This is the two groups. You've got the one group who are criticized for how they live their life, for the choices they've made, for the circumstances they've found themselves in, whether it's their fault or not. And then the other group who set themselves aside as good, upstanding people who are working hard, who are trying hard, who are doing the right bit, who are following the rules. And so this maps onto our story of the two sons, the older brother and the younger brother. The idea that the welcome is there, whatever you've been through, whatever you've come through. But also, see if you spent all that time trying to be good, trying to earn my love, trying to prove you're good enough. Are you not lost too? Are you not also lost? Aren't you as lost as the younger son?
Yeah, and of course, this whole story is links in with the teaching of Jesus when he talks about, I've come to seek and to save the lost. I've come to mend lives, mend situations. This whole story is about mending, about seeking to mend. And I would like to think that maybe if we get a chance to talk about this again, we might explore what the mending does.
Absolutely.
And what that idea of being forgiven, forgiveness. I mean, we haven't even spoken. It might be interesting at another point to speak about this whole Rembrandt interpretation of this story.
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. You know, I think there's so much to say that we'll need to come back to it.
I think there's so much to say, you know, but Rembrandt talks about in this story, he's trying to open up the forgiveness. What is the cost of forgiveness? There is a there's a price for everybody to pay. Forgiveness is never, ever, ever cheap.
No, it's never free.
It's never free.
It's never free. And so that that Albert's referring to is the painting by Rembrandt, The Return of the Prodigal Son. And so we recommend that you look at that painting, 17th century, I think, painting, if that's when Rembrandt was knocking around. And there's a beautiful book written about it by Henri Nouwen. And so when we return, we're going to be looking at that. So maybe between now and then, when you catch the next episode, you could look up that painting, The Return of the Prodigal Son, because it has this picture of this scene, this reunion scene, powerfully expressed through art.
And perhaps this podcast has been brought to you to create a restlessness and a challenge within your own soul to maybe bring about a resolution somewhere. And that might not just happen instantly. You know, recently I've been talking to someone about a repair job, and one contractor has said to me, he said, see, if you want a cheap job and you want it done fast, it will never be all that good.
Aye.
He said, if you want a good job and you want it done fast, it's going to be costly.
Yeah.
But you can't get a good job done fast, cheap.
It's like algebra, isn't it? It's like putting these bits together.
Now, that's the same with forgiveness.
Hey, amen.
It takes time.
Yep.
And maybe you need to allow that time for the healing. For the goodness to come. And for the job to be repaired. I could tell you another story about that, but I'll tell you that another day and another time.
Another reason to tune in, to subscribe.
It takes time.
It does.
And maybe what I'm going to suggest, could it be that the elder brother, all he needed was some time?
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I think so. What a wonderful note to end on. Thank you, Albert, and thanks, folks, for listening to this Restless Sanctuary podcast. We're just getting started. We're not even finished with The Prodigal Son. We'll be back talking about The Prodigal God and the two lost sons in our next episode. But thank you so much for being here with us, and I'm excited, Albert. I'm excited.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a wee bit restless.
Catch up with you. Catch up with you next time.
See ya.
See ya.